It's been a week in many and various ways that we have celebrated freedom, Independence Day. I was in my hometown on the 4th of July, which doesn't happen very often. It's been years and years. And one of the coolest things about my hometown is the way they do the 4th of July parade. It's one of the biggest in Wisconsin. And the start of the 4th of July parade was always my favorite part because they roll about 30 or 40 fire trucks and EMS vehicles and police cars at like 5 miles an hour, sirens full blast. It's just amazing. I have always loved fire engines and such. And I got to see it just this last week. It's like being a kid again. Freedom is what we have been celebrating. Freedom as we know it was unknown in the ancient world. The people we read about in the Old and New Testament were enslaved by, people were running from, or being massacred by in the Old Testament, the Egyptians and the Assyrians, constantly and throughout. Early Christians were running from, enslaved by, or being massacred by the Romans. They needed freedom, and they needed it badly. And into their world comes Jesus, the Messiah, and they believe he's going to set them free. The only time Jesus talks explicitly about freedom is in John's Gospel, which, as perhaps you remember, was the latest of the four written long after Jesus' death, long after the death of all the apostles. And John gives Jesus these words in this story that appear nowhere else in the New Testament. Jesus says, "Truly I say to you, everyone who commits sin is a slave to sin. The slave does not continue in the house forever. The son continues forever." And here's the key part. "So if the son makes you free, you will be free indeed." Free indeed. Well, unfortunately, that has nothing to do with politics, military, or even fire trucks. The freedom of which Jesus speaks, and the difference in this freedom from the one that people expected ultimately got him killed. Jesus is speaking about freedom from sin. Freedom from sin. And that is explicitly what the phrase in its original language refers to. Freedom from sin. Now, before I get to the good stuff in this little meditation, I need to give you a brief lesson on the doctrine of sin. Doesn't that sound like fun? We usually think of sin as a synonym for naughty, devious. We did something wrong. And it is that, but only in part and only minimally so. Sin, properly understood in the ancient world and from a theological point of view relating God and God's people, the synonym for sin is separation, or maybe even more dramatically, estrangement. Angry, irreconcilable, irretrievable estrangement, not person to person, but universe to God. And it's that level of separation and estrangement, a condition under which we live, out of which comes the possibility for naughty and devious and all manners of corruption. Jesus said, "The Son will make you free from sin and reconcile any and all unto himself." That's the level to which we are speaking. Well, what does that mean? Well, in practical terms, it means all the naughty, devious, and corrupt things we do fall under the dominion of what God is reuniting. We are really, truly free from the consequences of our behavior. Jesus' death forgives us, and everybody else, I might add. That's the hard part. For everything, every time, without fail. When you understand sin and the eradication of sin as the reuniting of all that was perfect at creation. Nobody's smiling. That doesn't sound like good news. It creates a puzzle. All right, Mr. Smart Guy. If we're always forgiven every time, all the time, why not just go nuts? Why bother to be a good person? God forgives us anyway. That's an interesting question, isn't it? Freedom, as in freedom from sin, in one sense, is correctly defined by Kris Kristofferson and sung by Janis Joplin. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose, or everything to gain, paradoxically. When we are free from sin, we are free from all that separates us. Well, then the question is, now what? Well, I think freedom is not only just another word for nothing left to lose, or another word for everything to gain. It's another word for gratitude. It's another word for responsibility. I think that our life together inevitably changes once we know that all sin, all time, every time, for all people, has been eradicated, ultimately, through the death of Jesus. I think there is an inevitable response. Not going nuts, not developing a practice of hedonism, but first of all, gratitude. Freedom from sin, understood properly, is just another word for gratitude. That's the initial, I think, inevitable response. There isn't much conversation about gratitude in the New Testament. The main Thanksgiving text we read is the story of the 10 lepers. It's told in Luke's Gospel, and in Luke's Gospel only, where Jesus comes upon 10 afflicted with leprosy, and just almost as an aside, heals them. And the way Luke tells the story is that 9 of them go their way, and 1 comes back. And the point Luke makes in his telling of the story of what Jesus does has to do with the fact that the only one who bothered to say thank you was the Samaritan. In other words, the outcast. The even more outcast than all the lepers were to begin with. Well, that's an interesting notion, really, because Luke's entire message is that Jesus' life and ministry is for all people. So he highlights the Samaritan. Well, I want to take the other 9 off the hook. Let's understand what leprosy did to you in those days. If you had the disease, you had happen to you every day and constantly, 100 times worse than the worst thing any in America or anywhere else has done to anyone with AIDS. I mean, keeping kids out of schools, keeping them out of churches, I might add. 100 times worse than that, constantly. Not only did the disease make you ill and have to live with the consequences of that, you were completely outcast and cut off from everybody. So when these 10 lepers were healed, sort of with the waving of a wand, they were not only free from their disease. It's not like your allergies cleared up. It was like they had their identity back. I think they went and put their life back together and made their life a process of thankfulness for having it back. Luke makes the point that it's a Samaritan. Well, that's what he does. But I think that gratitude is inevitable when something that good happens to you and your life begins to reflect what it means to be grateful. Which is why freedom's not just another word for nothing left to lose or everything to gain or gratitude, but responsibility. But responsibility. You will, I believe, inevitably be a more decent person and be a more responsible person once you understand the depth to which this gift sets you free. Let me just give you a silly little example, and then we'll explode it to try to make the point. Let's imagine the person in your life that kind of annoys you a little bit every time you're with them. An acquaintance, a cousin you're stuck with, something. They've got a weird habit of clearing their throat or interrupting a story or in some form or fashion. You just, when you're together as a group, you kind of try to spend most of your time in the other room, right? Just sort of avoiding the annoying thing. Well, imagine one day they show up at whatever it is, the sort of gathering where you see them, and they give you an unexpectedly timely gift. In other words, it's something that you really actually wanted. You know, the latest bestseller from your favorite author, it was released like yesterday, and it's going to take a month for the library to get it. Well, they show up with the book. You get it, like now. You can't stop yourself for at least the rest of that day being just a little more tolerant and a little more pleasant to this. You can't avoid it. It can't possibly not be it, right? Now, maybe it doesn't last, but you get the dynamic here. once you get the gift, you can't stop yourself from being just a little bit more responsible, a little bit more decent. There's one place in the New Testament where Paul addresses the Corinthian church, which is a place where actually hedonism ruled. This was a fun kind of a church, if you were a guy, for many other reasons. Gluttony, avarice, orgies, all the rage in the church. And somebody asks Paul, is it okay to eat the food that's offered to the idols at these orgies? You know, I mean, we're hungry, for heaven's sakes. We're Christians, and we avoid the connection with this pagan group. But is it all right to at least eat the food? It smells really good. Paul says, concerning food offered to idols, and he goes into this long, excessively theological thing, but he says, food will not commend us to God. We're no worse off if we do not eat, and no better off if we do. In other words, it's irrelevant. But here's the point. Only take care lest this liberty of yours somehow become a stumbling block to the weak. It's sort of like having a clerical collar on, driving down a highway, and making an obscene gesture at the driver who cut you off. You don't do that. It's not going to send you to hell any quicker than anything else you've done that was intemperate or immodest or any such thing. But for the rest of the day, that guy runs around talking about how the priest flipped him off. Not good. Freedom's just another word for responsibility. We do watch our language around kids because we know better. And here's the thing. When the Son makes us free, free indeed, not only are we inevitably more grateful, I think we're inevitably better people. It's an honor to be given this gift. Freedom's just another word for responsibility, gratitude, everything to gain, nothing left to lose. Think of it this way. At the gravesite of an honored veteran or a fallen hero, a very, very profound and touching and emotional ritual occurs when the honor guard folds the flag, and they practice this, and it's very, very specific. Fold the flag and hand it to the next of kin. Now, I see more of these than most people because I wind up at a lot of funerals. And I'm very close, typically, to where this little drama occurs. Maybe you know, maybe you don't. There are very specific words that are used in the handing of the flag to the next of kin. And the first words in the script are, on behalf of a grateful nation. On behalf of a grateful nation. I don't know about you, but every time I see that, first of all, your throat catches a little bit. And secondly, you make a little vow to yourself that at least for the rest of the day, and maybe for longer than that, I'm going to try to honor this gift with my life. That's what the Son sets us free to do. Imagine this. Imagine you get to be the one that hands whatever token similar to a folded American flag it might be, should this ever occur, to the mother of our Lord at his gravesite on behalf of a grateful church. This is what I'm going to do next, you know, now that I sort of get the idea here. For freedom is just another word for nothing left to gain or lose. It's another word for gratitude. It's another word for responsibility. Freedom is an opportunity to honor with our lives the one who sets us free, free from sin. Amen.